This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL. Tonight I'm joined by Alicia Bernatskaya, who is from the country of Belarus. I think you said Americans call you Alicia, so I might call you that because that might be easier. And she brought her daughter Isabel and her son Adam, who might have some interesting aspects to share with us too. They might pop in from time to time. But Alicia, let's start by, for our listeners who may not be familiar with where Belarus is on the map, can you say where it is and what countries it borders?
Yes. So since Ukraine is in the news, that probably would be a good point of reference. So Belarus is directly north of Ukraine. It borders with Russia, Poland, Lithuania, and Latvia at the north.
Okay. And, you know, I like to talk about kind of just the general aspects of the country, a little bit of history, and then we're going to get into your personal story. But, you know, Belarus, like so many countries, was almost a victim of geography, invaded over the years by many different powers, including the Vikings and the Mongols. But most recently, it was part of the Soviet Union. And I'm just wondering how Belarus, I mean, I believe the language is very similar to Russian and the culture probably is too. So how did Belarus survive as a separate, I don't know, entity for so long? With all these invasions and all this?
I'm not sure if it survived as a separate entity. It's very close to Russia, closer than Ukraine. So Ukraine has its own identity. The languages, you're absolutely right, are very similar, especially with Belarusian and Ukrainian language. So, for example, with the conflict with the war in Ukraine, I realized that I understand Ukrainian, even though I've never learned it in school. Actually, I understand it better than Belarusian now.
Interesting. Okay.
But I'm not going to call him president. I'm going to call him dictator of Belarus. He is very closely aligned with Putin. So there is really no separation or an attempt of separation from Russia. This point.
So why is it a separate country then? I'm still not clear because
it separated when USSR fell, just like Ukraine and other countries. And in 91, there was a president who was, I'm sorry, I forget his name. Shevchenko or something like that. Yeah. And he, at that time, he was trying to create, I guess go back to Belarusian identity. I remember we had a flag, white, red, white. The focus on Belarusian language and history was very strong at that time. But then when Lukashenko came to power, it slowly started reverting back to USSR. Now the Belarusian flag is the same as it was for Belarusian Republic during USSR years. So it's red and with a green stripe on the bottom.
But I guess what I'm getting at is, are there cultural distinctions that make Belarus a separate country? You know what I mean? In some countries, you know, it would be, these would be considered dialects of the same language and what they'd be in a.
So the language is, the language is slightly different. It's very similar to, let's say, maybe Spanish and Italian, so people can understand.
Okay, I thought it was even closer than that.
Probably closer than that. Cultural aspects, because we were part of one USSR for so long, cultural differences became very minimalized.
Yeah, yeah. But there, I guess there always was a desire for independence. And
that's right, that's right.
Like Ukraine, too.
Mm-hmm. So. Not as strong as in Ukraine, but yes.
Yeah.
There was a strong push, especially in 91, for to make Belarusian language to be an official language of the country.
Mm.
It didn't stick because Lukashenko came to power 4 years later. So
we keep mentioning this name. We're going to talk about him.
Yes, we will.
I know you have a lot to say about him. But let's go back a little bit and talk about the Soviet era. And I know, I mean, you were very young when the Soviet Union fell, but I mean, I know a lot about Ukraine. I've learned a lot from talking to people about how it was forced into the Soviet Union, and there was that forced famine. They call it the Holodomor,
mm-hmm.
which killed millions of people in Stalin's day, trying to basically force the peasants into the collectivization. Mm-hmm. So did Belarus have a similar history like that in the 20s and 30s?
I don't think so. Maybe if it was, it wasn't mentioned. So I was actually, we were talking about that in the car. So when I was in school, and it was during USSR time, the history was presented differently to us. So they were intentionally kind of minimizing the individuality of Belarus, trying to make it, you know, part of the bigger country. Different historical perspectives were not mentioned at all. For example, I've never heard of Golodomor in Ukraine until recently.
Yeah. Okay. But there was a lot of Russification, I guess. They
yes. Yes, absolutely.
I know in a lot of the countries that are now independent but were part of the Soviet Union, the Soviet government would place ethnic Russians in those countries to try to...
That's your absolutely
for linguistic
right.
reasons and also political, and mm-hmm. I guess. Did that happen there too?
Yes. And so trying to go back in my memory, I don't think Belarusian language was even taught in elementary school. I think they introduced it to the curriculum in 91.
Hmm. Now, when Belarus became independent, did the Russian people, was there some kind of a backlash against ethnic Russians, and did a lot of them leave the country, or was that?
Not so much in Belarus, because Belarus is aligned with Russia closer than Ukraine was. Okay. So, and at that time, we lived at the north of Belarus, so it was basically on the border with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So there was really no distinction between who was Russian, who wasn't. And we all spoke Russian.
Well, like compared to someplace like, I guess, Lithuania, that which had a really different language. And
that you're absolutely right.
Latvia, maybe. Mm-hmm. Okay. What did your maybe grandparents ever tell you stories about life in the, say, 40s under Stalin, or what? How challenging it was for people?
So not so much during Stalin, because at that time everything was hidden, you know, all the repressions, they did not come out until later. My grandma told me story, actually both grandmas and great-grandma told me stories about the war.
Yeah.
But not so much during Stalin.
I read that 25% of the population of Belarus died in World War II. Is that right?
I thought it was more.
Really?
Maybe 25 officially, yes. But Belarus was the first, because it was bordering with Poland, so that was the country that was invaded right away.
Mm.
But Belarus was completely occupied by Nazis.
Uh-huh. And I read they just burned thousands of villages to the ground.
Yes. So when we went to in 2011, there's a famous village in Minsk region. Mm-hmm. It kind of represents of all other villages that were burned. It's called Hatynь, and I have pictures. So Nazis burned the village completely. They put all the residents into a barn, everybody, and they set fire to the barn and everything. So the only thing that was remained, the fireplace, the
chimneys.
Yeah, now it's a memorial.
Was it Jewish people or anybody that got in their way?
The whole village, and I don't think there were any Jewish people there. So it wasn't just about Jews. It was Slavs. It was everybody.
Anybody that maybe didn't agree with Nazi policy. And there was a so-called Minsk ghetto, like the Warsaw ghetto, where Jewish people were kept during the
war,
right?
You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
And then I guess most of them didn't survive.
The ones that remained there, yes. A lot of people fled to the east, and that was the case with my grandparents on the maternal side. On paternal side, my great-grandma and my grandma, they were taken as, I guess you can call it slaves, as workers to Germany.
Mm, really? How long did that last?
I don't remember what year they came back. So I think they took them in 41, right, when they invaded. And I think they came back after the war.
Mm. Well, as we mentioned, Belarus became independent in 1991, mm-hmm. right? And maybe you were too young to remember that, but what was the feeling in the public when it looked like the Soviet Union would collapse? Were people hopeful that things were really going to be better with the new regime, or were they kind of cynical because they had their hopes dashed so many times?
In 91, I was, 12 years old, and it didn't really stick out in my memory. Mm. So what I do remember that my parents and great-parents and grandparents tried not to talk politics in front of me because of a lot of reasons. So normally grown-ups would discuss politics in the evening when kids are asleep, like in the kitchen with closed door and whispering.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was just not emphasized to the children.
Maybe they wanted to protect you.
That could possibly be it. And also there was, concern for repression because kids talk.
Yeah.
What if children would say something to the school? Oh, my parents said that. And next thing you know, somebody's knocking on the door.
Right. And that did happen, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Before we move on to independence, we skipped over something that was very significant, which was the Chernobyl accident, and that was in Ukraine, but it was close to Belarus, right, near the border?
Yes, it
and
was.
1986, so.
So the town where I was born, it was South Belarus, and that's where my mom's side, my mom's family lived. It's, 100-something miles from Chernobyl? And most of the impact, I guess, because of the wind, it went to the town. Yeah. So a lot of people are still suffering. Victoria,
yeah.
She lived in that town. And I remember my aunt and uncle, during summers, they would come to us just to get away from all of that, just from the environment, because 100-something miles, it's very close.
What's at that location now, the Chernobyl plant? Is that just vacant now? Is it all torn down? Do you know?
I don't think there is access to that area. I know that there were some, with the war in Ukraine, there were some Russians trying to dig trenches in the forest. That was not a very smart idea, so I would be surprised if they're still alive. But nobody lives there.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Actually, my dad was going to be sent to Chernobyl right after the accident to try to rebuild.
Really?
Well, a lot of people did, actually. From my town, my classmate's father, he was sent there. He was part of the military, and actually several people that I know. And they passed away from cancers and other things before they were 40.
And that was all hushed up, I guess, when it happened.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only reason why my dad wasn't sent, because we lived in the small town, 30,000 population, and my grandfather was a director of, general manager of the wood processing center that the town was built around. So he was very influential. He had a lot of people. So when his friends found out that my dad was going to be sent there, they pulled strings to get him out of it.
What would he have been doing there?
Building. My father is civil engineer.
Oh, okay.
So building railroads, just kind of directing. He was also all men in USSR are reservists because that was just part of the rebuilding effort. I'm not sure why would anyone want to rebuild there, but
Yeah. Do you remember when actually Belarus became independent? Were there celebrations in the streets? Were people happy?
I don't remember. No, nothing stood out. There were celebrations every year, like Revolution, I think October 7th or November 7th, mm-hmm. something like that. So we would have parades for Revolution and USSR and you know, all of that, but not when Belarus became independent.
Interesting. I just remember like when the Berlin Wall fell, there were all the celebration in Germany.
It was not emphasized, or at least it doesn't stand out in my memory when Berlin Wall fell. It was not as big of a deal as it was, let's say, in the West.
Right. Interesting. One more thing, you know, in the Soviet days, the country, as far as we knew, was called Belorussia.
It's the same thing. That's right.
And now we were told, I can remember a newscaster saying in 1991, the country is to be called Belarus. And for that matter, what we used to call Moldavia was now Moldova.
You're absolutely right.
Now, are these like the true pronunciations of the names that we were mispronouncing all those years?
No, Europe. So the same thing is, so my first language is Russian. So in Russian, it was called Belarusia, like Belarusia.
Uh-huh.
And now it's Belarus, Belarus.
So they did consciously
the
make
same
it
thing,
change.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And what about Moldova? You know about that?
Same thing.
How do they pronounce it in their language?
Moldovia. And now it's Moldova.
We say Moldova. And Belarus literally means White Russia, right?
That's right.
And that's like a political, or it's not the same White Russians.
It's more,
like
Bolshevik. White Belaya also means like pretty.
Pretty?
Pretty, uh-huh. Clean, kind of something. That's right. Okay. So it's not just about the color.
Okay. Pretty Russia.
Something like that. Mm-hmm.
All right. I think it's time for our first break. So why don't we take a little pause here and we'll come back and we'll get into your story. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Arnell's Hardwoods. For all of your laminate and hardwood flooring needs, call them at 314-397-3252.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by the Indoor Comfort Team. For all of your heating and cooling needs, call the Indoor Comfort Team at 314-230-9542.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans. Alessia was talking about the regime change from Soviet Union to independent Belarus. That must have been challenging for a lot of reasons, like economically, for one thing. Inflation probably was a big deal. Do you remember how your family was affected in those days?
Yes. So, and at that time, it wasn't as shocking as now looking back because we didn't know any differently, right? So, in my childhood, I remember that it's not like, so here we change clothes every day, right? Our closets are full of stuff. It wasn't like that. So, first of all, it wasn't even about money, it was about availability. So what I remember, there was no such thing as going to the store and picking out, let's say, a pair of sneakers out of the selection in your size. It didn't exist. What would happen, I remember looking from the window at the lines in the store. Someone would find out that there is going to be a shipment to the store. So people would line up a day or two before by the store. And then when the store finally opens, you just grab whatever you can get your hands on. It doesn't matter if it's your size or it's not your size, if it's the color. So you grab what you can, and then you put an advertisement in the newspaper saying, I have, let's say, a pair of sneakers, size this, or, pair of shoes, size that. We'll exchange for something of the other size.
This was after the independence or before?
I'm not both. Even sure if it was. I think it was.
All the time?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I heard about things like that in the Soviet Union with, like, food. If there was,
it was the same
something,
thing.
People would wait in line for a particular
sausage or something. Very true. So, again, it wasn't that money was the issue. It was the issue of availability. Yeah. So what, and it was rations. So we had coupons.
Oh.
It wasn't to reduce price. It was you're allowed for family of four, you're allowed certain amount of, let's say, butter or bread. So when I remember going to the store, you're supposed to have money, you're supposed to have like a basket, and you're supposed to have those coupons. Because without those coupons, you're not going to be able to get that. So they would cut out. So if you're buying a certain amount of butter, you give them the coupons and you're done for the month. You're not going to get any more butter unless you you exchange it with the other family.
Mm-hmm. We call those ration cards. We had them during World War II here.
Well, I think everybody had them during World War II, but not in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Another thing that was memorable. So the freezers were very small, and I remember they were covered by like 3 inches of ice. So what we would start doing, let's say in March, if we managed to buy something like a bologna or piece of meat, we would put it in the freezer because that was for big holiday, like a birthday celebration or New Year.
Is it like that today? Hopefully it's a little bit better.
You know, it's not like that today. It's probably moving into that direction with all the sanctions and everything like that. But it wasn't like that, right? The food was, similar to what we have here. You can buy anything.
Let's hear from Adam. You were in Belarus about 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And what did you notice anything about shortages of commodities?
No, they pretty much had everything. I remember when we went, we pretty much only ate kielbasa on these little kielbasa sandwiches, like little sausage sandwiches. But they had everything. Like, we'd go to there was a supermarket across the street from the apartment building that my mom and our family used to live in. We'd go there. They'd have like a bunch of like different selections. I was a kid then.
He was 9 years old at that time.
I was only really paying attention to like ice cream, you know, fun cereals.
I heard that ice cream was really good in the Soviet Union.
So funny you say that. We have here, we have a variation of that. They come in the waffle cones, mm-hmm. not like cones that you know differently. Yeah. They have them in Global Food Market.
Really?
So when him and I went there, and at that time it wasn't readily available. So I really missed that ice cream because it wasn't like here, you buy a bucket of ice cream and you put it in the freezer. It wasn't like that. The only time you would have ice cream when you go to town and you buy one because, again, no room in the freezer. So what we decided, when we go there, every time we see ice cream, we're buying it. We ate ice cream like, 10 times a day?
It was really good.
Yeah, it was all just like sausage sandwiches and ice cream. It was great. I'm at 9 years old.
That's a kid's paradise. Wow. Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room, Lukashenko. He has been the president. He still is today. He's been the president almost since the beginning of...
Since 94.
Yeah. And is this an improvement over the Soviet Union?
No.
Worse?
No.
Okay.
In ways, it's worse because with Soviet Union, there were standards. With him, it's all about protecting the power. So laws change laws. In quotations, change all the time. He's a dictator. So, and as I said, he's the reason why we're here. Because at that time, we were just thinking about moving here. So when he was elected... my parents decided, it's time to go.
All right, so there are fewer human rights. I guess people have less freedom than... And he's been able to stay in power. Did he change the Constitution to allow him to have more than...
He changed the Constitution. He's falsifying elections. Okay. So the one in 2020 was particularly obvious. He's no longer even recognized by...
There were some protests after that, right?
There were. And they were... what's the word I'm looking for?
They were squashed.
That's right. That's right.
And I read that people that he arrested, many of them were tortured.
Tortured. That's right. Some are still in prison. One of the main people in the opposition, He has been in prison since then. His wife was actually, she put her name on the ballot to kind of represent him, and she was elected, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, and she's been in exile since then.
Now, is it true that Lukashenko is sort of assisting Putin against Ukraine? You alluded to that before, and I've heard that.
Yes. So Lukashenko is, he is trying to walk that fine line between coming off as an ally to Lukashenko and also kind of protecting his power, because he realizes that if he were to send troops to Ukraine, they will turn the weapons around at him. But Putin is also pressuring him because he needs assistance.
Yeah. I mean, do you think he'll ever get deposed or ousted?
Possibly. It will depend on what will happen to Putin. Mm. So if Putin is out of power, the only reason why Lukashenko managed to stay in power in 2020, because Putin was sending him money to pay off the enforcers.
Okay, let's talk about your childhood. You were 12, I think you said, when the regime changed. But what was your life like before the age of 12? You grew up in a small town. Talk about your childhood, mm-hmm. school, what kids did for fun.
So I was born in a bigger town in the south of Belarus. And then my parents were still college students at that time. That was normal. So my mom was 20 when I was born. My dad was 21. They were just finishing college. We lived with my mom's parents. That's also very standard. Then after my parents got their degrees, they were sent, I guess here it's called internships. Mm-hmm. So because education is free, you're supposed to work for 2 years. They were sent to Siberia. It wasn't like...
If you say that to an American, it sounds like...
It sounds horrible, like, yes.
Okay, but what was it? What was it actually?
They were...
job there, right?
That's right. That's right, internship. So then a year... So they were sent there for 2 years. A year in, they decided to bring me there. So my grandparents took me there. So I remember living in Siberia for a year. And then my dad had to serve his time in the military. Everybody does. So he was civil engineer, he was sent farther in Siberia to build the big railroad project. And at that time, it was not very appropriate place for a 2-3-year-old child. My parents sent me to my mom's family back in south of Belarus. So I grew up there until I was almost 6. And then we moved to my dad's hometown in the north of Belarus. It was a small town, 30,000 people. And that's where I went to school.
And what was the school like?
So education system is different than here. So here in America, class is everybody, let's say, in 11th grade, right? Hundreds of kids. Over there, it was a group of, let's say, between 20... 35 kids, and they go together from first grade until the end of school.
The same groups.
Same group of people. That's right. So education, other differences, I would say. So over here, just based on, I went to school here in America also. I did 2 years of high school, so I can use my own experience to compare. So here people have selection, right? So let's say if you are not really good in math, you can do a little bit easier math, let's say arithmetic, right? And if you're a little bit better, you can do calculus. Over there, it wasn't like that. It was, here's your math. And if you succeed, you succeed. If you don't, well, guess what? You're going to get an F and maybe stay behind for second year. So there was no variety in the content.
Do you remember how the United States was?
Yes.
Presented like in the history books and things like that.
So we got a lot of it from the movies.
Oh,
so Red Heat with Arnold Schwarzenegger, other things, Weekend at Bernie's. So that we learned about. But again, movies were limited because of the Iron Curtain,
yeah.
Right? So we would get a contraband. And so here's a funny thing about movie theaters. So I remember when VCR players first became available. So what they did in the movie theater in our town, they got the biggest TV they could find in the VCR on stage. And people would line up and watch, you know, that TV.
Heard that.
Yep.
How do you remember how United States was presented by your teachers?
That's right. So Americans were presented as very spoiled, with no kind of survival skills. There were a lot of comedy bits about it. Teachers were making comments. In school, I don't really remember us talking about America or the West.
Did you ever think you would come here when you were 10 years old?
Not 10 years old, but when my family, when my extended family started kind of thinking about it and taking steps, yeah. I was really hopeful. Another thing that was missing, there was really no diversity. Everybody looked like me. Everybody sounded like me. I remember one of the people not in my class, but in parallel class, his family moved to Poland for 2 years. And when he came back, we looked at him like he was God because he was in another country. Mm-hmm. It was just so out of the ordinary that it almost felt like he was not even real. Mm-hmm. So when thinking about other countries like America or Europe, it was always something that I was curious about. But I really don't think I remember I was shocked because in my mind, I had the image of Manhattan when I thought about America. And when we moved to St. Louis, it was like it's a camp.
So, well, how did that come about? You said that your parents decided we got to get out of here. But it's easier said than done, I'm sure. So how did that process start?
So it started years before. So my grandfather's sister, so on my mom's side, we're Jewish. So my mom's 100% Jewish. So that was her aunt, her father's sister. She wanted to move. She went to the embassy. There was a Jewish refugee program. So she went to the embassy 3-4 times, and they kept rejecting her. And I think finally they just got sick of her, and they wanted her to leave them alone. So they let her come. So I think her and her children and her grandchildren moved in 91.
St. Louis?
To St. Louis. They didn't pick St. Louis. Yeah. It was just...
They came as a refugee.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So then my other family moved, and I remember my grandparents, they were having conversations. Should we move? Should we not move? My grandparents were leaning towards, yes, let's move. But at that time, they lived there, you know, all of their life. They were 50, 60 years old. So it was a big, very big thing for them. So they did decide to go. My grandfather actually passed away a year before they went. He passed away 2 weeks before they had an interview in the embassy. So my grandma, my aunt, my uncle, and cousin, they moved here in 94, 95. And then they sent us paperwork, and then we moved in 96. I remember my parents talking about, oh, should we move, should we not? And in my mind, I remember thinking, you can think about what you want. I'm moving.
And how old were you then?
When we moved, I was 16 and a half. So at that time, 15, about her age? 15?
We got to take another short break. Sorry, but we're going to pick this story up in just a minute. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Samim Afghan Restaurant, featuring traditional Afghan cuisine and conveniently located on Manchester Road in the Grove.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you by Hacking Law, for individuals who want to come and stay in the U.S. Hacking Law fights for immigrants every day. Visit them at hackingimmigrationlaw.com.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans. Alicia was talking about how her family kind of decided that it was time to get out of the country. And you were talking about how your one of your relatives went to a refugee, I guess, office to apply to get out. But when people did that in Belarus, I mean, was there a backlash? If your employer found out or any of your neighbors found out, would that be a problem?
I think it depended on what time they did. So I think earlier in the, I know some people got out in late 80s, some people got out in the early 90s. So it also depended where you were working. So we did not advertise any of that. And they can tell you some stories about that people had no idea even in small town.
You didn't tell your classmates or your friends?
I didn't. Wow. I didn't. I only told my best friend like a month before we left. And same with my boyfriend at the time. So nobody knew.
Was there a lot of anti-Semitism at that time? And was it equal to, less or more than Soviet days?
I can't really compare it to what it was during Soviet days because I don't remember. There were people would call Jewish people names, like Jid, for example. So I remember there was a separate cemetery for Jews. I remember we were told not to really advertise that we are. But what I also remember, I never hid from conflict. So if I heard some conversations, Jews are this and Jews are that, my response is, well, I am. What are you going to do about it? Why didn't you tell me how horrible I am?
Yeah. Were there synagogues in the country? Were they people free to go and worship?
I don't remember. So we did not. I knew that we were Jewish. I don't remember my grandparents speaking Hebrew or Yiddish. That's right. And apparently my great grandparents did, but not my grandparents. And we did not really talk about synagogue. I don't remember seeing one. I don't even remember the word synagogue.
Were churches available? I mean, could people go to church without any
problems? First of all, religion was not really allowed at that time.
You're talking about
any religion.
Currently now or
no,
Soviet?
Back then.
Okay.
So when I was born, I was baptized.
Yeah.
And because that was not allowed, they had to baptize me in secret. So I was like 2 or 1 years old. So I heard stories. And then I remember same from my brother. We left the house when it was like 3 a.m. and went to church during the night. My dad's not Jewish, so my dad's Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
So religion was not allowed in any form.
What about now? Do you know what it's like now?
Now Orthodox is allowed. It's very, they're working closely with the government.
Okay.
When it comes to Jews, it's years of, I guess, being used to not liking Jews. It leaves a mark. But it's interesting, a lot of prominent people, like comedians and famous people, they are Jewish. Mm. Now with the war, a lot of Russians migrated to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a known fact. It's just,
yeah. Okay, so your family got permission to leave, and then you came to St. Louis, and you were 16. Did you speak English at the time?
No, I did not, because in school, you didn't have a choice. Your, let's say, group of people, your class was assigned. My class was assigned German. The parallel class was assigned English, so I took...
Arbitrarily?
Yep. I took German for 5 years. I know nothing. I cannot even count in German, because... They were teaching, the way they were teaching is, here's the book, here's dictionary, go translate.
Right.
That's the way they taught.
But you, I guess, went to high school here, so
yes.
You went to ESL classes?
When I came here, because I did not speak any English, I was sent to Parkway Central High School because they had English second language program. Mm-hmm. And I remember meeting Mrs. Patterson. She was the ESL teacher.
Yeah.
And she came into the room and she said, "Hi." And I remember I was prepared for hello, but I didn't know what hi was.
You really were a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long did it take you to feel comfortable with the language?
Well, I'm working on it.
I think you're doing fine now, but...
My kids think that I don't think you hear my accent anymore, right? Because you're just so used to it.
My friends would come over and they'd be like, "Oh, your mom has an accent." And I never knew.
There was a lady from England down the street from us when we were growing up. And to my ears, she had a strong British accent. Her kids didn't hear it either. And she came after the war. She was a war bride. So she'd been here for a while. And when she would go back to England, they thought she had an American accent. So it shifts around a lot, I guess. What were those days like? In the first days in school, were there American kids that kind of reached out to you and welcomed you? Were there other Russian-speaking kids at the school, or how challenging was it?
So I was lucky. We lived in Pavilion Apartments in Kryvyi, and there was a lot of immigrants there. So a lot of people from Russia my age, and we went to school together. So I did not feel isolated. And because of ESL program, there were kids from other schools. So I felt okay. I did not feel isolated or any kind of... I did not feel uncomfortable. What felt weird was I was older than everybody in high school because I was... they put me like 2 years back. I started as a freshman.
Uh-huh.
So that was the only thing. I don't think I was happy in high school, so I did everything I could to leave early, and I graduated in December.
Oh, really? Did you have American friends, American-born friends?
Not really.
Oh,
so I was hanging out with other immigrants' children, mostly from Russia or Belarus, just because we spoke the same language. There were some from Mexico and some other countries.
Now, do your two kids speak Russian or Belarusian? Did you teach them?
It's a sore topic, but not the way you think. Adam, go ahead.
Okay, Adam, the story.
Yeah, so it's mostly my mom likes to, when she talks to other Russian people and they ask if I speak Russian, she likes to compare me to like a dog. I can understand, but I can't really speak.
Oh.
So I can really understand pretty much most things. And then I think same goes for my sister. And then, you know, there's like, I can speak enough to get by. You drop me in the middle of Russia, I can say enough to, like, you know, get by. But I can't really sustain it.
When you were there 10 years ago, you've been there for a couple of days. You probably picked up on that.
When we were there for how long? 2 weeks.
3 weeks.
3 weeks, yeah. By the end of it, I was like, I was also pretty young too, so I was really like hitting my stride. Mm-hmm. You know, I made friends there. I was speaking the language, but then you come back and then you don't really speak it.
Yeah, so
you kind of lose it.
Did you go too, Isabel?
Yeah, I was like 3 years old, so I didn't really go. But I think the reason why we don't speak it is like my dad is from America, so we don't really have the chance to speak the language.
The main reason is I'm lazy. It's easier because my job, I speak English. With my husband, I speak English, so it's just easier. Mm-hmm. Because if I were to try to speak Russian, I would have to think harder. And it's just...
Really? Well, I guess you've lived here longer than there. Yeah, that mm-hmm. makes sense. Are you trying to keep the culture alive with your kids to a certain extent as much as possible?
I'm not really doing anything intentionally. It just comes out, for example, with food and holidays, how we celebrate things. So it happens naturally. I do regret not speaking Russian to them because it's a free language, right?
You have a lot of culture. Like, at least when I was younger, you know, my mom was pretty young when she had me. So when she'd be at work, I'd be at my grandparents. So, you know, Babushka, Dedushka, like all those people, they really only spoke Russian. So mm-hmm. I would have them. And then I also grew up, and so did Isabel, watching a lot of Russian, you know, media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have your cartoons, old movies, all that stuff. So we grew up, like, we didn't really watch, there was no really Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon. It was just like old Russian cartoons.
What were some of the Russian popular old Russian cartoons?
So there's like, it's... the American equivalent would be like Tom and Jerry or something like that, but it's Nupakadi. So instead of like cat and mouse, it was rabbit and wolf.
Really?
So it was just like wolf chases the rabbit, that kind of stuff. We also had like other old movies. So like we had, there was like Russian version of Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Buratina.
There's also Masha and Medvedev, which is like Masha and the Bear now. It's like
just late.
Yeah.
The ones that I'm talking about were like old, USSR. Mm-hmm. You can see there's one, it's called Bremensky Muzikanti. It's Bremen Town Musicians. Yeah. You can see a lot of the old like communist Russia influences in some of those.
Fascinating.
But that's probably the only thing they did well was movies and cartoons.
And ice cream.
And ice cream.
Music too.
Music too. Also they went to preschool. It was
here?
At home preschool.
St. Louis.
That's right. But the teacher, I guess that's what you she is from Belarus, from Minsk, Miss Anna. So she's like a second mother to them. She volunteers there now.
Miss Anna.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Anna was, is it Vasilionik?
Anna Vasilionik.
Now you mentioned that you like maybe special foods and holidays you celebrate. What are some typical foods that you try to have here at holidays or special occasions?
My kids probably would.
Sure. It's not even really holidays. Like we pretty much consistently have a lot of Russian dishes. So I know right now we have, you know, one of the most famous Russian dishes, borscht. Yeah, right. Beet soup. Or Soviet, we'll just call it Soviet dishes.
And
Slavic dishes.
Touchy.
Yeah. Kotletki, which is like ground beef and turkey. Well, yeah.
I know like stuff we see at like parties all the time, like shuba, olivia.
What's shuba?
It's like beet salad, but like.
It's like herring.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And you said olivier?
Yeah, it's like a Russian potato salad.
Yeah, that's good. I like that too. Mm-hmm. You call it olivier, but other people call it Russian salad, I think.
Goroshek, because you put canned peas.
Yeah, so pickles.
That's right.
Yeah.
Potatoes, eggs.
Yeah.
Bologna.
Yeah. Bologna, that was a big deal.
Well, that was the only.
A lot of
kielbasa. Yeah.
So pretty much every meal comes with sour cream.
Oh, really? And bread, black bread.
That's right. And something Adam pointed out that I really never thought about it was soup. Apparently, we always had soup, and that's that USSR thing.
Not as much anymore, but up until like age of like 10, 12, it was pretty much if we had no other food, it was always just soup or just like 10 different variations of some kind of soup.
Sounds good. Well, what are you doing now these days? What kind of work are you doing now?
I work for Washington University. I am IT program manager.
Okay. And how's that going?
It's going great.
Okay. What do you think your life would be like today if you had never come here? Do you even want to go there and talk about it?
Sure. I'd probably be in jail, probably with my mom.
You're not kidding. You said that to me before, but you're not kidding.
Yes, I'm serious. So I have no filter.
Okay. Yes, I think so.
I think I get it from my mom mostly. Uh-huh. She's worse than me. He's too.
So do you feel more American now? You feel more Belarusian, I guess, or Russian?
So I've lived here for 27 years, and I lived there for 16 and a half. So home is United States. Mm-hmm.
What is the best thing and what's the worst thing about living in the United States? Maybe I can ask the kids too. But
the best thing is the freedom. There are opportunities. You're in charge of your own life. Over there, not so much. If you didn't have connections, you were nothing.
Mm.
So you always had to rely on other people. Here, everything's in your hands. And the worst thing, I can't think of anything.
Mm. Wow. What about you two? Any thoughts on that? You don't have a lot to compare it to, I guess. But
well, I mean, I did live abroad, off and on for a pretty long time. And I guess in the States, everything's really easy. It's very convenient. You know, I lived in Cairo off and on for, combined multiple years. And here it's just like everything, you can do anything super easily.
I don't think we appreciate or realize that. I love to hear people that I talk to on the show. They notice this. We don't even notice these things. We take so much for granted here. On that note, do you have any words of wisdom to end with, something that you've noticed maybe as an outsider that we might not have noticed ourselves?
So thinking back to my childhood and then comparing to what's going on there, I think the most important things to preserve are the first two amendments, freedom of speech and right to bear arms. Because that's one of the things that, let's say, Belarus is in a situation where they are. They can't do anything about it because they don't have weapons and there is no free speech.
It's so important to listen to people like you who've been in other countries that don't have the advantages that we have, as we seem to be losing a lot of the things we have taken for granted. So thank you for pointing that out. Well, thanks to all of you for this really interesting conversation. I wish we had more time, but
it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Telling me that time is up. So thanks again. Spasiba, bolshoi.
Very good. I'm impressed.
You've been listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL. Please join us next week. Thank you.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.